wizard needs food badly.
Welcome to American Soccer Analysis. I'm your host, Harrison Crowe, joined with the ever-lovable duo of Matthias Kulawatz and Drew Olson. Drew, you might think you have my voice down, but you have no idea. I have the most amazing voice.
A guy can dream, can he?
By the way, that quality last week was terrible. I enjoy the podcast thoroughly. You guys always do a great job, regardless of whether I'm here or not. It completely makes me feel useless at times, but I will stick up for the listener and say I tried to listen to it the following night because I was on nights last week, and it just was so tremendously awful. But at least you guys made up with it for good quality. So kudos to you guys for stepping up and doing all that stuff while I was out. So I appreciate it. With that, everybody's probably wondering, why is there a podcast going on a Thursday? You said Tuesday. We're now recording Thursday night, which, by the way, this is podcast – for those that are counting at home, this is podcast 29, the international break and all that garbage, as I have titled it. So, what are we doing on a Thursday night? I guess because Matthias ultimately came up with the excuse of he had to do data for – who are you doing data for?
For Zach Slayton at Forbes.
Yes, you were. And that's another way we'll just kind of throw our
name. I am a slave. I do work for free.
I know. You do work for Casey, you know, over there at North and South of Royal Brom, and then, of course, for us, and, you know, it's cool, and abusing you and your wonderful, nice, you know, ways that you are. So, Drew, how's that master's degree going?
Dude, I have, like, 3 weeks left, so I've mailed it in, but it just won't end.
Yeah, you send Matthias the email. Yeah, give me some data to mine so I can procrastinate. I was like, now I feel bad for asking you to do anything. I'm like, I don't want to mention anything. I'm scared you'll like get like, you know, a lower grade or.
Dude, at this point, I don't even care. Just give me the damn degree, you know?
Yeah. Well, hey, I got a question for you. And this completely off subject from what we discussed and what we were going to talk about tonight, but are you doing less work or more work for your master's degree?
Than undergrad, you mean?
Yes.
I am doing definitely less.
Someone was telling me that today. And yeah. So you were right. You know, both of us, all of us work full time, but I kind of said, hey, I'm not going to go for my master's degree after I finish my undergrad. I'm just going to ride this out and enjoy the break. Someone said, oh yeah, but you do less work for your master's than you do for your undergrad. And I was like, really? I think I like the sound of that.
Well, the cool thing about master's is that you get to do whatever you want. Like I'm, you know, taking classes and things I actually care about instead of, you know, biology 100, which
did you ever take jazz appreciation?
I did take that. It was a hard class. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed it though.
Not something I was as interested in.
Yeah, exactly.
You had to get 4 credits in music, you know. So
yeah, we went to a liberal arts school, full heavies.
Wow, that's like all of us that complete our degree through Air Force Community College, the Air Force, for our 2 years. Yeah, we always have like there's a couple classes. It's like interpretation of I'm trying to remember what it is. Interpretation of something to deal with poetry and all this other nonsense. And that's like that's the class that everyone takes for their for one of their English credits. and it's really easy. And so everyone's always, oh, you got to take this. And I think my troop came back to me and he was like, dude, are you serious? That was like one of the hardest classes I've ever had to take. Why did you recommend that to me? That sucked. That was poetry. So
that's awesome. I actually have a segue to bring us back to what this podcast is about.
All right.
The last time I took a math class was my junior year of high school.
Oh, that brings us back to something on this podcast?
Well, because we, you know, numbers and statistics and shit.
All right. About the numbers and the statistics and, well, other things. I'm really flabbergasted at how amazingly uninteresting these last two men's national team games were.
International breaks are the worst thing in the world. Especially, I don't know. Awful.
Well, with that, what's sad is like everybody clamors for how everything should be as far as MLS is concerned with taking the international break. MLS takes the international break and everybody's like, oh, this sucks so much. And like the loud, obnoxious, you know, drooling voice that we all conjure up in our minds like something off Looney Tunes. But, I mean, it does. It just absolutely was awful this week. And Maddie said it last week on the podcast. Okay, so we really rushed to knock out the first leg. And then we wait 2.5 weeks for the second leg. I mean, it made no sense on why they rushed on that. But we're here. We're done. What did you guys think of the international break? What were your takeaways? Did you even bother paying attention?
Yeah.
Maddie, did you
watch? I was really pulling for Egypt.
Yeah, me too. Well, actually, France gave me hope for the Timbers because they were, you know, down 2-0 coming to the next leg. So, you know, anything can happen. That's all that mattered, right? Ronaldo continued to Ronaldo. Mexico continued to Mexico. And
Mexico was facing New Zealand is what happened. Let's all be real for a second. Mexico isn't back. They played New Zealand.
Indeed.
And New Zealand's not as great as the United States at completely screwing Mexico over on the road. But
there was a tweet I tweeted out to you, Harrison, maybe both of you, about how we rushed to judge Mexico because of a bad funk they basically had for maybe 10 games in the qualifiers. And, you know, that seems like kind of quick judgment, you know, because they actually did lead the qualifiers in shot ratio, even though that included a game against the United States, where the United States just turtle-shelled up. But
that's still a great stat. I think that's really interesting because we are really quick to judge them. But if you do consider the fact that they really didn't finish a lot of their chances – Maybe we're underestimating where this team is, where Mexico is in the grand scheme of things.
I would say the game states are really important in that, though, because, you know, just thinking about the games where the USA got ahead on Mexico, you know, then Mexico brought the attack out, but it was once they were losing. So I would imagine a lot of those shots came after they were already behind. I mean, not that that necessarily changes things, but, you know, it's – definitely something to factor in.
Oh, I think it does change things, though. I mean, because number one, the opposing team is allowing you to have possession, which is something that's weird. I don't know why teams suddenly turtle and are all right with allowing the opposing team to maintain possession inside their third as if that's a suitable attacking strategy. But I'm not necessarily the king when it comes to that sort of that thing. It's not like I'm being paid.
What do you think, Caleb Porter or something?
No. I'm not taking a jab at Caleb Porter. I'm just saying, going to continue on with the same attack as normal. I mean, when I play FIFA, I don't go up 1-0 and then completely pull my players into defensive mode. I play the same as I normally would. Maybe in that last, you know, 10 minutes, I'm going to, you know, maybe be a little bit conservative and not allow my defenders to get so too far up the field. You know, you don't want to risk that counterattack. But at the same time, that's just my line of thinking. So, you know, I'm not paid to be a professional. I know strategies. But
Drew and I have a friend who has never played soccer in his life and plays FIFA pretty well. I mean, like, as well as anyone who plays a couple times a week or whatever. And he doesn't pass. He just completely dribbles around in circles until your defender stabs at the ball and misses, and then he takes a shot and he does pretty well that strategy. And like, he puts it on ultra attacking every time.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Every time. Game starts, ultra attacking. Every time.
Okay, well, I'm not talking necessarily about that, but I think to an extent you have to consider being down 1-0. For some reason, a lot of teams allow a lot more shots. This is actually something that as we start investigating more into game states, which we're full-fledged in the middle of, I think we're probably about a quarter of the way through collecting all the data across what chalkboard data is available.
Well, 2013.
Well, I sent it out that they needed to, we all needed to do more than just 2013. But since
we're doing progress to this point, I'd say we're like about a quarter of the way through 2013.
Okay.
If I were estimating, if there was a bar along the bottom of the viewer or the listener's screens,
a thermometer that was slowly filling.
Yeah, like that.
Okay.
Well, so I was thinking on that game states thing, I feel like a team that's a natural, that's an underdog, if that team goes up 1-0, gets kind of like a surprise goal early, I feel like that's the sort of team that can benefit from turtling up a little bit because they weren't expected to be in this situation. But when a good team goes up 1-0, there should be no reason for them to stop playing out and playing normally.
I agree. I very much agree. Guiding this discussion back to the U.S. side of things, and now that we kind of have an idea of what all of CONCACAF looks like, how do you see the U.S. kind of shake out their year? How do you feel going into 2014, a World Cup year? How do you feel? What do you think? Do you like the fact that we won a cup? The Gold Cup? Did you feel like confident because we won the qualifying stages, the Hex tournament? How do you guys feel about the U.S. team?
Well, by the numbers, this is the most successful year in U.S. men's national team history as far as winning percentage goes. I think with more than like 4 or 5 games. So by that standard, it's one of the best ever. And I would actually probably say that overall it's one of the best years the U.S. national team's ever had. Yeah, the last couple of games were boring, but also I don't think were games we talked about it last week that necessarily mattered whether we won or lost. But the fact is that we qualified early. We built a good team. I think unquestionably the best team in CONCACAF right now. And I think we're well-placed for the World Cup. And once we draw Portugal and Spain and Ghana, things might change. But
well, so, and that is going to be the huge deal breaker. Is what December 7th is the?
Yeah, it's like coming up really soon.
Yeah, we only got another 2 weeks left. What were you going to say, Maddie?
Drew mentioned last week that one thing he wanted to look at it from these games was not the result, but. So what he saw from certain players or the kind of combinations of players. So I was going to ask you, Drew, like, did you see something, things that you liked or didn't like from the games this last week or anything to indicate good news or bad news?
There wasn't any huge breakthroughs, I don't think. I think Aaron Johansson has pretty much solidified his spot. I think barring injury, he's pretty much a lock at this point for the World Cup squad. You know, disagree.
I've heard a couple people say that. But what did he do that was that okay, so he got himself into some interesting situations. But I felt like he failed to finish in the Scotland. And I didn't have the opportunity because Austria played during my duty hours. So I didn't get a chance to watch Austria. But it felt like anything that I – I did say duty. I didn't feel like there was anything specifically that Aaron Johansson did that I was like, wow. So he's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think anybody did anything amazing.
And even if he had, what would it have mattered? It did not look like Scotland, and I'm only taking away from the one game that I saw in Scotland and US and the highlights I saw of Austria, to where I saw like, oh my goodness, these two teams were pushing at each other. They were emotionally invested. It didn't even seem like the players, like take Sasha Kljestan for example, it didn't even look like he was really convinced that he had to play for anything. And where I think Kljestan is probably one of the most underrated players in the U.S. men's national team and has a genuine opportunity to win a solid rotational spot within this team and showed absolutely nothing.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't argue. Nice. Someone just took a swig of beer. Yeah, I mean, I don't think we learned a lot. If anything, Brooks was another guy that was needed to show himself, and I think he definitely had some jitters and didn't look great out there. It definitely felt like games that didn't feel important, you know, especially coming from these qualifiers that felt pretty important. But I do think –
Question on question, Kim, if nice. I please, if I may. what is his natural position?
Center midfielder, center defensive midfielder.
See dictionary, Clinton Dempsey.
Yeah, he's not as much attacking as Dempsey, though, right?
No, yeah, I think that's kind of more of a I guess you'd call him a CAM, a central attacking midfielder that has some Michael Bradley-esque features.
He's almost kind of like a Stuart Holden type of guy, where he can get back, yeah. But he also is dynamic going forward. Yeah.
Yeah. Poor Stuart Holden.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move into things that are a little bit more interesting. Playoffs. We have two games. Finally, they're here. Let's talk about what we've been waiting 2 weeks for, and that is we're recording on a Thursday night, so in two nights we have Sporting in Houston. Three nights we have Sunday night, November 24th, we have the big game for you two, being Portland supporters, Portland and RSL in Portland. We'll put the latter game off to the side for 1 second. Sporting Kansas City in Houston. The series is tied right now going into the second leg. What is going to happen going into this game? Drew, talk to me a little bit about what it is for these two teams and their players to be going into this situation, going into Kansas City. Do you have any money riding at all on Houston at this point?
Absolutely not. I think Kansas City is going to, you know, they might only sneak out with a 1 or 2, you know, nil game or something like this. I just think it's going to be really hard for Houston to get any goals in Kansas City. That said, we've talked before this season about how KC has given up a lot of goals this season at home. I think that is unlikely in this game just because of the way these teams are built.
I don't think that it's a high number of goals. I think that it's so we've been talking a little bit about offline about importance of goals and the timing of goals. And I think that's where Kansas City struggles. They've given up awkward goals at poor times. And I think that's what's been kind of the Achilles heel. I think that if you look at Kansas City and the game is tied nil-nil going into the 80th minute, I put all my money that I have on Houston.
Really? Because of Dom Kinnear?
Take your bet.
Shut up, Sporting. We'll get to you in a second.
Yeah, so why do you say that? Because Dom Kinnear is so good in the playoffs?
It has nothing to – it actually has nothing to do with Dom Kinnear. So much it has to do with Sporting. I think that – and you can look at it from Maddie's perspective, and it's completely valid that they've gotten unlucky in some scenarios and as far as – allowing late goals or goals in very limited shot selections, and not just shot selections, but probability sectors. I think that's one of the things that's been fun looking at games and detailing some data by hand is that we've gotten to see, or I've gotten to see, and I know, I'm sure Maddie's the same, we've gotten to see some locations of where goals have scored, and seeing, especially for Kansas City, where they've allowed goals and allowed shots. And it's not as though that they're allowing a ton of high-pressure shots, such as from section one and two, as what we define on our little goal map out there on American Soccer Analysis, out there for our website. We define all the different positions. And as Maddie has detailed a couple times in some of his posts, the section one and two, of course, are the highest probability for shots and goals being scored. Now, with that being said, it's not as though that they're allowing a ton of those shots, and then they're not. There, it's just an increased ratio at which goals across the board are being scored. So I think that that's what's kind of interesting here, and maybe it comes down to the fact that they've just gotten unlucky, and that might possibly be. That said, I'm not somebody that necessarily goes completely hardcore into luck either. I think that sometimes there has to be a reason for that. And I kind of lean a little bit, and this is probably bad being that, you know, we host a show on analytics, but I think that I lean a little bit more into the mentality of the situation. And as far as the tactics of the situation, I think that they allow these goals inherently built into their system. And Maddie, you can go ahead and tell me I'm an idiot here.
No, I like you.
Liking me has nothing to do with my intelligence, my friend.
Well, I feel like there's certain things that have been shown to represent maybe like true talent level, and certain things that haven't. It's like when you talk about you mentioned like some of it could just all be random, and that's the side that I lean on, but that doesn't mean I'm right. I mean, Kansas City could have a real flaw in its game that prevents it from producing the goal differentials that we feel like it should from its shot differentials. So, you know, I'm not going to pretend like I know things. One thing I do know is that 70% of all home teams in MLS produced more shots than their opponents this season. And for Kansas City, that number was even higher. So if I were to bet on something, I would bet they're going to get more shots than Houston on Saturday. Whether or not that leads to a win, that might be a little bit less probable. But
let me turn this around on you, Harrison. So this game gets to the 85th minute and it's tied 0-0. You say you're taking Houston. I guess why, and as a corollary of that, wouldn't you rather have Graham Zusi and Benny Failhaber and CJ Sapong rather than Omar Cummings and Andrew Driver in that situation?
Well, all right, first of all, the first two people that you mentioned, Benny Failhaber and Graham Zusi, they are providers. They're not goal scorers. So if you look directly at this, at the sense and the context of what they're doing out in the pitch, they're providing opportunities. Sporting Kansas City, and I think that this is probably something, and we're getting a little ahead of where we're going on this, but I think if they can acquire a natural goal scorer, and there's a couple out there.
Claudio Bieler ain't one.
I think that that's really where their weakness has stemmed. It's not necessarily in overpowering their opponent and goal and shot ratios, but I think that it's in finishing. I think that they've allowed their opponent has gotten lucky, and I'll just go ahead and say lucky in this context, that they've randomly occurred more goals to shot ratios than their opponents. But at the same time, I feel like Brad Davis can do this, cancels out Graham Zusi. And so at that point in time, it's just purely about 85th minute, who gets the best look. And let's just say that in that short a time span, anything could happen. And yeah, you could have Kansas City score, but I think that when you shorten the time period, I think you increase the probability for, if you will, chaos to ensue. Sure. And I think it increases the probability that Houston has a chance to sneak in and steal something. And I would assume that, Matthias, you would agree with that. The longer that Kansas City goes without a goal in the second leg, the longer or the higher the probability that Houston has to win that match.
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, generally for in any sport, I feel like for the team that's an underdog, the shorter the game is, the better the chance they have. But kind of one of the cliches is talking about shortening the game if you're trying to pull an upset. And that has a lot of merit to it, because if you shorten the game, you increase the variability. And increasing the variability is always good for the team that's behind, because they want more unpredictable outcomes, right? So, like, if Houston gets it to the 85th minute and they're still tied, Houston should be excited about that rather than – more excited than they were at the beginning of the game being tied, basically. No, I agree with that statement, that as the game goes on, if the score remains tied, Houston should be happier with that, except Kansas City would still be favored, I think, at any point in a tie game, because they're going to go to extra time at the end of regulation if it's tied, and the home team still enjoys all the advantages of a home team in that segment.
All right, well, moving on to Portland real
before
fast.
Before you move on, I have some fun
I'm sorry.
Data. Fun Let's data.
Go. Fun data alert.
So – this season,
real fast, Drew, give us a drop.
What? That's my drop.
No, Drew is the king of drops. He gives us drops all the time. Drew, give us a drop. Say something funny.
Fun data. that wasn't very good.
I miss Drew's drops. Go ahead, Maddie.
Kansas City played 17 home games, as did every other team in the league. In all 17 home games, 100%, they outshot their opponents. That's my stat.
That wasn't very fun.
I had to mute my
fun.
I had to mute my mic. I nearly fell off my sofa. All right.
That was undeserving of the drop I just gave it.
I don't think so. I think it was a marvelous.
Graham Zusi is an alien that has special talents. Second drop.
Well, well, not only special talents but amazing hair. But that's neither here nor.
Well, because it's not real. That's why it's so amazing.
Neither here nor hair.
Yeah, there you are. I was going there. I wasn't gonna push it, but there, you let it materialize. Real fast, going through some transfer rumors. Eddie Johnson, what do you guys say? Where does he end up? Where in the world is Eddie Johnson? Forget Carmen San Diego. Where is Eddie Johnson?
Hell if I know. You're the man that should answer that question, aren't you?
Whoa. How am I the man? I mean, okay, I get that I'm the Seattle fan and everything. He's gone, and I think that we can all three agree at this point in time, right?
I don't know.
Well, I mean,
they just DP'd Alonzo, right? Doesn't that make it kind of hard to offer Eddie Johnson similar things?
Well, all right. So first of all, I was going to ask you this question when we play the game. But I'm just going to go ahead and we're going to start the game a little bit early. Crowdsourcing, does Eddie Johnson deserve a DP contract? Yes or no? Maddie.
Just so I can clarify.
A designated player contract would be anything over $350,000. It doesn't matter how much over or how little over.
Right, okay.
Does he merit $350,000 against your cap?
Yeah, you know, I'd say so. At $350,000, I think there's a number of teams that could afford that would get value out of that. Just as I think if you look at guys like Keane and Donovan that are making, you know, $4.5 million. Now I realize they're in an environment where there's a lot more money in Los Angeles, but that's what I'm saying is not every team would want to DP him at 375 or 300 or anything over 350, I guess, because that's what goes against their cap. But I think there are enough teams that would, and enough teams that would get value out of paying him 350 plus. So I'd say yes.
All right, Drew, what do you say?
I say no. You look at the only other, correct me if I'm wrong, the only American goal scorer that's a DP, aside from the obvious Landon Donovan, Clint Dempsey, is Chris Wondolowski, which is probably more closer comparison, I would say. He just got signed to a DP contract last season after leading the league in goal scoring for 3 years. Eddie Johnson hasn't had, what, more than 15? How many goals has he had last season? I don't think he's had more than 15 or so.
Yeah, no, he this season, last season he had, I think, a 15 or 16. No, he didn't even have 16. He might have had 15. This season he didn't even reach double digits. So
Nine, right? I thought he had nine.
Yeah, he had nine.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I look, he's really good. I don't think he's on the same level as a lot of the other guys. You know, he's a little better than guys like Ryan Johnson or even, you know, imagine Omar Cummings 2 years ago, Connor Casey. There's a lot of guys that might not be in the same, you know, skill as him, but they're pretty dang close and they're not making anywhere the numbers he is. I think he's a quality player. I don't think he's a DP.
No, and okay, so you pretty much Drew hit everything on the corner. I think the two guys that you have to look at, Chris Wondolowski, definitely. But the second one is Kenny Cooper. Kenny Cooper has a lot of the same merits and a lot of the same – I think the difference between Eddie Johnson and those two players is the fact that he's going to go to the World Cup, which for the sake of argument, you could say is an attractive quality for a club to have, especially when you start talking about Forbes. And we're going to talk about this in a second, and not necessarily Forbes in general, you know, but rather the article that they ran valuating and putting in – specific dollar value on the club itself and how much it's worth. And I think having a striker that's one of the top U.S. strikers in the pool available to the men's national team has a lot of merit. It's a brand, if you will. You know, we've talked about brands on this podcast before. And so I think that he hovers right in that gray area to where you're really not sure. I think that there's a few clubs, Columbus, DC, Toronto, that are desperate enough to make him a DP. If he stays in Seattle, he's not a DP. And that's not because we don't have a designated player slot to make available to him. I'm saying that in the context of we have better places to spend our money.
And we have a lot of money, though, pretty obviously. And in that
well, sense, sure.
Money doesn't like the extra however many dollars don't mean as much to you as they might mean to the Timbers or some other team.
I wouldn't say the Timbers. I would say in the context of this conversation, I would say in the lower echelon of the league. But yes, I agree. In general.
San Jose, for example.
Yes.
There you go. I think Wondolowski was their first DP, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he barely makes. I mean, he barely qualifies. He's a designated player in name alone.
Yeah.
Well, as an example, sort of relative terms, Seattle, in a sense, is kind of like the Yankees of soccer in the sense that they have now one of the three highest payrolls of MLS teams, like the Yankees have the highest one. And the Yankees can pay extra money for a guy like Derek Jeter, for instance, not because he's that good, but because he's part of a brand. And so I think in that sense, Seattle can pay for brand names relative to MLS terms more so than a lot of teams can.
The problem with that, and this is we're trying to wrap everything up, but the problem with that is that there is a salary cap. And I think because of that, Seattle's going to be less inclined because they have their own brand, because their brand is
but
Seattle.
MLS makes rules for Seattle that help them, so does it that matter?
Well, okay. Being a Seattle fan, I can acknowledge that this is actually a fact, and it would be all right with it within the same sentence. But with that being said, you have to acknowledge that they still function somewhere within the same cap. And because of the simple fact that A, they didn't finish high enough to get additional resources at the end of the season, and they didn't finish low enough to get additional resources. So they're going to be stuck somewhere in the middle, which means they can't pay down high contracts that aren't designated players such as Eddie Johnson. So that means the guys that are going to be hovering right on the fringes of designated player status, which has been, you know, Ozzie Alonso for the last couple of years, as well as, you know, John Hurtado Kennedy, and as well as Jeff Park and some of the other different players, Michael Sperning, you can't necessarily pay down these contracts anymore because you're not having all these additional resources because you're not qualifying for a Champions League. But then again, you're not placing so poorly that you're getting additional resources. So, you know, with that, you just kind of have to say, well, is this brand worth buying into to help us grow our club on a global level? And I don't think that that's necessarily true. I think Seattle's doing fine, as you mentioned, financially. So that's why I say that clubs on a lower echelon, such as Toronto, DC, and DC and Toronto is more of a situation to where they're making money, but they need to improve the on-field production. So buying that into that brand not just helps their overall situation, it also helps their on-field situation. So additionally, then you have DC United, who needs God only knows however much more than Eddie Johnson, and then including Columbus now, who doesn't necessarily have the glitzy and glamour, the spotlight that they can actually show off to other additional free agents, or, you know, those that are sitting outside of MLS that might be inclined to try MLS. I think Federico Higuain is kind of a unique scenario. So maybe getting an Eddie Johnson would be a huge coup for somebody like Columbus Crew, who need that proven goal scorer with Higuain, and can be the difference between the Crew finishing sixth and seventh and finishing possibly in the top three. I really strongly believe they get someone like Eddie Johnson and they're suddenly somebody that could really push for the top three spots in the East.
We talked about how jam-packed the East was and how so many teams were really up until the last maybe four games fighting for a spot. Our predictive rankings suggest that Columbus was maybe even slightly better than, like, Columbus was in the same ballpark as the Red Bulls, for instance, in terms of their predictive statistics. Same ballpark as New England, same ballpark as Philadelphia and even Houston. So with Columbus, we're talking about a team that in a parallel universe could have had a couple balls roll in the goal that didn't and could have been in the playoffs. I mean, I don't think that's very far-fetched. To add Eddie Johnson to that mix, and like you said, I mean, it could totally be a top three team.
That said, you know, Dominic Oduro probably had his best season as a pro, and he is almost pretty much the same mold as Eddie Johnson, really fast, and, you know, hits it. I mean, I think Eddie Johnson is pretty much the same player, just better, but I don't know that he improves them all that much.
We've had that conversation before, to where I called Eddie Johnson or Dominic Oduro Eddie Johnson, the poor man's Eddie Johnson. I think and I had that conversation. I don't know if it was on the podcast or not, but yeah, I completely agree with you. But with that being said, having Eddie Johnson and Dominic Oduro on the same squad, I think, and not just that, but the fact that Higuain is probably the single best deliverer of service in MLS, I think that completely changes the construct of this conversation. I think it takes it to a whole nother level of how good of a finisher is Eddie Johnson, and could he end up with 20 plus goals with having that type of service, which really in Seattle, he's had next to little service this entire season. So it would be an interesting situation to go into really fast. Juan Aguadelo, does he end up outside of MLS? Yes or no?
I hope so. I mean,
you don't want him to come back?
I think he's kind of been everywhere in MLS. I think he's ready to go. For his sake, I hope he finds a club abroad that he can succeed at. I don't think there's anything left here for him to prove necessarily. The whole Stoke situation is a major bummer, obviously. So England apparently is out of the picture, but I think he can succeed elsewhere, and I don't know that he has a lot left here to do.
Could you see him playing in South America, one of the Brazilian or Argentinian leagues? Is that more possible or more probable?
probably definitely more possible. I don't know that those are the type of leagues that he would excel in. I think he'd probably do better over in Europe somewhere, even if it is like Scandinavia somewhere, or even, you know, like the A-League or something like that in Australia. I don't know. I'm somewhat afraid of the South American leagues just because they are so, you know, it's like Italy where they take a step over and the whistle blows. So I don't think that's necessarily to his benefit, but I think he can succeed in any league, to be honest.
All right, so moving beyond Agudelo, real fast, looking at the loans, you have Clint Dempsey, you have who – do you guys – either of you think that he should be going out on a loan at this point in time? I mean, contextually, I guess it could make sense with the whole World Cup and the fact that, you know, he's got to get all geared up and everything, but – he just hasn't been healthy in the last 6 months. I mean, the guy's got to do something. Go fishing, relax, let the hamstrings heal. Am I completely off?
No, I totally agree. I think if he's healthy, he should go. If he feels like he can perform, you know, at an EPL level, then, you know, more power to him. He should get out there and get a loan to Tottenham or Everton or wherever the hell he's going to go. I totally agree with you, though, that if he's got some nagging injuries, he needs to chill out and pull a Landon Donovan and just, you know, take the summer off and go kill some trout or something, you know.
Well, and with that, Tim Cahill, and it's funny because I was just down at – we have a bar at the at this condo I stay at. There, it sits downstairs in the lobby. It's really – it's kind of like, have you ever
bar in your condo?
Yes, I actually do. It's called City Dog. I have so many different, I have so many problems with it. It's not, I can't even begin to voice them all in a single episode. But with that.
Is it because you're sitting at the bar right now?
No, I'm not. I'm actually sitting on my couch because I have my phone, everything sitting right.
I believe you're sitting on your sofa.
I'm sitting on my sofa, relaxing. Actually, I'm like lounged, and you know, I short of a robe, I'm very comfortable.
there's something stored inside that robe too. Or something.
Oh God, concentration. You guys drink too much. With all that said, I said that to say this. I was at the bar ordering wings, and the guy said he had ordered a Red Bull vodka, and he said, "Do you want to make it a double?" I was like, "Oh yeah, who doesn't make it a double when they have the opportunity?" My response was, "Well, anyone that doesn't have enough cash." That leads me into Tim Cahill, who right now the A-League teams that want Tim Cahill can't afford a whole salary. And so they're asking the Red Bulls about the possibility of a shortened loan so that they can afford to pay that salary. I guess
they're asking for one shot of Tim Cahill instead of two.
Right. Okay. They're asking for a 6-week loan versus the normal 12-week loan, I guess, which is pretty standard across the board, for half the amount of money. So basically they're like, MLS, we only have – count them. We have $5.12. What can we get of Tim Cahill?
Harrison just opened up his piggy bank.
I mean, this is kind of embarrassing. I mean, after having a couple different journalists write about how far the A-League is ahead of MLS, which was preposterous to begin with, it's kind of humorous to see this drunk come to the bar, stumble to the bar, put all the money he has left
drinking
in his life.
Right,
drinking Fosters, and he's just like, "How much can I get for this? how much more alcohol can I get with all of this? And he just, like, lets all of his quarters fall out of his hands and fall all over the table. And the barkeeper just has that delirious look on their face, like, you poor, sad expletive, what is wrong with you? And that's how I kind of view the A-League at this point in time. It's kind of like, bro, put up the money. If you want Tim Cahill, pay for Tim Cahill. If you don't want Tim Cahill, pay for, you know, whoever, whatever the next guy in line is. Whether I don't know any other Kiwis or Australians that are in.
Jake Gleason.
There you go. You know what? If you can't drink from top shelf Cahill, pay for Gleason.
It's a 1-to-1 comparison.
If I knew more liquors, I could probably do this pretty well. But I'm sorry. I'm pretty relegated in my knowledge. But going
you
with
you could
that,
almost say that they're trying to get the fine kangaroo, but all they can afford is the burnt to a crisp emu.
You're – need to try more. With that was just my little Cahill rant. I read that sometime this morning, and I just thought that was probably one of the most ludicrous things that I had heard. Outside of all the rumors, do you guys hear any other rumors you guys want to talk about? Anything possibly other than Eddie Johnson wanna Aguadelo, Dempsey, Cahill?
I think that covers it. That all I can think of right now.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to go to segment two. We're going to talk league finances. We're going to talk expansion. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the different conversations that have gone on. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the projects, and we're going to kind of open up the floor to a new game. So stay with us. We're going to be right back. American Soccer Analysis, as we just are completely off the deep end at this point in time. Maddie reminded me very late to the fact that we didn't cover the Portland and
RSL.
Yeah, RSL. I said Sporting. I wanted to keep saying Sporting. I couldn't change the direction that I was going. I was on a one-way street. It was only going one way. RSL.
Rather Sporting of you.
Thank you. So with that, we're going to go through what I call the game, and it's going to be our new game because I host this show, and it's about time that I have a say in something rather than people make up games and I have to follow them and they're lame.
Oh, okay. I know who I would kill.
Now that I've offended Drew and he's taken up his own stance on things, let's talk expansion. Orlando City becomes the 21st team in the world's worst – or 21st, 22nd? They're the 21st, correct?
21st.
Yeah. All right, 21st and the world's worst kept secret. The fact that they were still parading in the, oh, what are we going to announce? I wonder. I mean, that was like so Andy Griffith. I mean,
I thought Mickey Mouse had signed as Seattle's new DP, but I was wrong.
You're funny. What do you guys think about adding Orlando City? What do you think about MLS adding a Southeastern team? I mean, obviously, you know, you got David Beckham that's going to probably, assumedly, exercise his MLS team option for Miami. What do you guys think about adding two teams to the Southeast?
I think this, well, to take it even further, not only is that two teams in the Southeast, that's two teams in Florida. So the MLS fan in me is a little afraid because Florida has burned MLS before, obviously in Tampa and Miami. Orlando, I think, is a safer bet, though. They've shown that they're, you know, they've got a lot of fans that come. They've committed to a soccer-specific stadium to be built. I think that's a safe choice. Miami scares the bejesus out of me because it's a terrible sports town, you know, well-known. They can't even get people to NBA Finals games. So that's, I think, the riskier option. But I think Orlando is a safe bet. What would you say, Matthias?
Everything you said sounds logical.
Okay, so I'm here in Tampa, right, which is, I want to say, a little over 100 miles west of Orlando. And I don't know if you know this, they have a vicious rivalry. I'm like talking, this is Portland and Seattle down here. So,
With palm trees.
What's that?
With palm trees.
With palm trees, correct. Rather than, you know, all the other. Anyways, here's the deal. I have about five or six different Ralph's Mob individuals that I stay in pretty good contact with. And as Orlando City is being announced as MLS's 21st team, they're just ripping the trash out on Orlando City. And the main thing that I keep hearing, and not just from specific Tampa fans, but from people in the South in general, is that Orlando City has really swept their attendance record under the rug. They're supposedly averaging, what, about 5 to 8 on average for USL Pro games. But from my understanding, and this is the rumor going on, is that that's a lot of tickets that have been dispersed throughout the community, not necessarily purchased tickets. Now, we all understand that MLS does a lot of this nonsense, especially for Chivas, and we'll get into that in a second. But what do you guys think about the fact that some teams don't necessarily disclose all the financial numbers, and does that concern you if that's remotely true, even though that they've committed to a soccer-specific stadium?
Well, yeah, it concerns you. You know, if they're not being truthful about how many people are coming, that's a concern. I don't think it's a deal breaker necessarily. I would imagine that the people at MLS have looked at those numbers, and they probably have a way of determining the real number of people that are showing up to games. If they can figure out that, you know, the 400 people that go to Chivas games actually count 5,000, then they can probably do the reverse math on that as well and figure out how many people are going to Orlando games, if that's true, which it probably is. So I think that's a concern. I would imagine that the Soccer Don has looked at that and determined that this is a worthwhile venture. You know, the MLS hasn't missed as far as expansion teams go in quite a while now. So I think it's a safe bet.
Well, and getting into some of the league financial status, is there, looking through the you guys had a chance to review the current document that was supplied by Forbes as far as what their valuation of each club. Did you guys take a look at that? Is there anybody that specifically stood out for you as far as who was up there in terms of financial I don't know how to say it, but positive financial value relative to the rest of the league?
Go for it, Matthias.
I was just looking at it currently.
Is there anybody that surprised you?
Yeah, totally. You have it right there in was it fourth? I think you had Houston. And we just watched a playoff game recently where Drew made a comment while we were doing a podcast, no one's at the stadium. And then Toronto is fifth ahead of the New York Red Bulls, who I guess, I mean, maybe I just have all the wrong variables in the wrong places, but it just seems like New York would be a more valuable team and Toronto would not be a more valuable team and Houston would not be. But yeah, so I would say there are definitely surprises on this list. Maybe you guys can tell me why they're not so surprising. I'm surprised.
Drewby, what do you got to say?
Well, no, I totally agree. I mean, the fact that Houston is the fifth most valuable franchise in MLS, I think, is surprising to a lot of folks. I wonder, they haven't done this ranking in a few years. I wonder where it stood last time. I would imagine Toronto was even higher because they've, you know, seen a dip as their performance has continued to be lackluster. I would also imagine that New York's gone down just because the aura from that team is, you know, worn off. And I guess they've had their best season in quite a while, but they still kind of stink. It does make you wonder, you know, the Red Bulls also were the biggest, had the, what am I trying to say? They lost the most money of any of their teams.
Right, their operating income. Yeah, that's what exactly. I was going to point out as well.
Yeah, so they lost more money than any other team in the league, which makes you really curious about, you know, there's another team coming to that same city. So you got to wonder what's the future of that. I would say another surprise, unsurprising, is Chivas USA at the bottom. The crazy thing about that, though, is they had $15 million in revenue, which is the exact same amount as the San Jose Earthquakes, which is a little curious to me because the San Jose Earthquakes, you know, they only have a 10,000-person stadium at Buckshaw, but they sell out pretty much every game. So it's curious as to how they could have the same amount of revenue as Chivas USA team that we've lambasted on a regular basis for about 27 podcasts now.
So. Good point, because revenue doesn't take into account costs, so revenue shouldn't be taking into account, like player contracts and other expenses to running a team. This is just like how much money you make. I'm assuming it's primarily ticket sales and advertising, I would have to think. And
I think that not just advertising, but you got to think about pure revenue as far as jersey sales,
is that
the
not
brand name.
League though?
I believe it is to some degree, but this isn't about how much they're sharing out to the rest of the league. This is how much they take home at the end of the day.
Right. So it still seems weird, though, that Chivas USA and –
Well, you got to think Chivas Guadalajara is a brand name down in Mexico. So I think that's where they probably make up the tiniest bit to where they're being completely –
They're confusing. People are getting confused into buying Chivas USA jerseys when they're trying to find Guadalajara jerseys.
You know what? Actually, that's exactly my that was exactly my frame of reference when I was thinking about that today.
I think it's not refundable.
Yeah, to where like Kmart's like, look, you can't take that back. We can't afford to accept that. Seriously.
That's amazing.
But the team that stood out the most to me, outside of the fact that RSL actually operated with a negative operating income, awkward. But DC United coming in second to last. I know DC United had a bad year this year, and we can all accept that, you know, they were not a good club this year. And okay, that comes with some obvious negative attachments. As Seattle Mariner fans, we can all kind of come to accept these aspects of losing. With that, I wouldn't have put them second to last. They are maybe the most, by MLS standards, certainly not by, you know, American historical standards, but by MLS standards, they are probably one of the most decorated clubs in this league. And so it's surprising to me that they can't find more money, and maybe that's wrong of me. Maybe that's
no. I think you're totally right. As someone that lives in Washington D.C., you know, it's more likely that I'm going to see a Lakers jersey here than I would ever see a DC United jersey. This is just folks just don't really care about it. I'm hopeful that'll change.
Sure, but at the same time, it doesn't that have to play into the fact that there's, I mean, they're not completely obsolete compared to the rest of the league. I mean, it's not like you're going to walk around Philly and see a Union jersey.
Yeah, that's right. I think the stadium is a big deal. the team hasn't been – I mean, they were good last year, but this season was pretty rough, as were the couple of years preceding it. I think a stadium is going to be a big deal, especially if they can get into Navy Yard, which is where the Nationals play. I think that could be a nice stepping board. I think D.C. is a good soccer city. You know, they sell out RFK for national team games, men and women, a lot of times. There's just no – I don't know what it is. There's just very little support for United. I almost think the city takes it for granted in a lot of ways, that United's probably the most – without a doubt, the, you know, the most storied franchise in MLS and the best original team, I would say. So it's disappointing as a resident that – people laugh at me when I tell them I'm a season ticket holder, but I don't think it's something that can't be fixed.
I agree with you, but at the same time, I agree that the stadium deal will change that aspect, and it'll probably thrust them at least a few positions upwards. But at the same time, I'm really surprised by the fact that they are able to win U.S. Open Cups, have the MLS Cup legacies, and still over the last, you know, almost, you know, 15 years, 18 years, not be able to, not to do anything to really cultivate. And I agree with you. I think it's a great soccer town. That's why I'm more perplexed about the fact that they haven't been able to garner more revenue throughout that city. But, you know, I think that the bigger perspective, and really if you look at this list, you see Seattle number one, you see Portland number three, and then you go all the way down to – I actually am having to count. 13. Vancouver is 13th on that list.
Yeah, that's, so the top three teams are from the Western Conference, and then
forget about the next ten. Forget about that for a second, and let's go ahead and go into our little Cascadia hut for a second. You have two of the top three teams being from Cascadia, and then you drop all the way down to 13 for Vancouver Whitecaps.
But they won the Cascadia Cup! Yay!
But seriously, they have an operating income of zero, according to the site, zero. So, I mean, this is kind of a black eye in a way for an organization that really prides itself in a lot of ways of being that NASL, being that part of that Cascadia rivalry. Oftentimes, they're the forgotten member of the Cascadia trio. And so this kind of just goes and cements that. A lot of times as a Sounders fan, I kind of feel bad at the fact that I feel like sometimes, and a lot of times actually, I underrate them as a club and as a rival because of the simple fact that I look forward so much to the games against Portland. But this feels like it kind of solidifies it. Does it not for you guys as Portland fans?
Go for it, Maddie.
I don't know. I think when we watch games and as we're watching them, we can separate the money from what's happening on the field. Like when we do podcasts like this and we talk about what's good decisions for teams to make, yeah, we bring the money in. But I don't know, watching the games, like I think the Timbers Vancouver match that they tied 2-2 later on in the season this last year was just as exciting as any match I watched all year, and maybe not as, I mean, I don't know. I just quantifying like what I enjoyed watching. Like I didn't feel much of a difference. But I guess there is that feeling of being in the stadium that makes it different. I'm not sure the money makes it all that different between in the rivalry. You know what I mean? Like I don't feel like the money dictates the rivalry. I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Well, MLS is a league that, you know, far more than any other league in America is driven by ticket sales. And stadium revenues, because, you know, they just don't make the money off of TV deals like every other American league. So, you know, we could pull it down to that, right? Like maybe BC Place, which is like a massive stadium akin to the Clink, that, you know, it's just not as good a stadium experience if you can't fill it up. Whereas, you know, the Timbers or Kansas City or, even Toronto, have a more intimate experience that maybe provides a better place for a fan to go. And so they can, you know, afford to spend, or they feel like it's worthwhile to spend their money to go to that game. Whereas you come to DC and the stadium feels like it's going to crumble on top of you. So it's not the same experience.
Let me ask you real fast. We didn't mention this in the last segment when we were talking about transfers and rumors, but supposedly Toronto is saying they are 30 days away from changing the landscape of the league as far as when it comes to designated players. Do you believe them?
Well, they're signing Diego Maradona, obviously.
Yeah. Somebody tell him Pele is over the hill. I just saw him in a Subway commercial, by the way. How far that man has fallen. Yeah.
That's awkward.
Oh, yeah. By the way, my laughing, that's sad.
Yeah, I mean, no. I mean, they're full of crap, right? I guess my guess is, if anything, it's maybe Diego Forlán again. I think the Maxi Arruti thing didn't exactly work out the way they intended, so who knows?
I think they gave up on him way too quickly.
Yeah, well, I mean, they fired their GM and they wanted to go a different direction, I think. Although DK, you know, looks like he might even make the Nigerian national team for the World Cup. So,
hey, I certainly think so after his goal this past weekend. Yeah. It was magnificent as far as – I don't know if you guys saw the replay of it. But moving on, real quick, Maddie, you want to talk about some of the projects we got going on for the site? Kind of keep some of our listeners informed as far as what we're doing with some of the shot data.
Yeah, so what we're doing is we're looking at every single shot that has been shot in Major League Soccer. Right now, 2013, but as far back as the chalkboards go, 2011 and 2012. And we're looking at information about the shots, such as when they took place in the game, what was the score at the time, who was the keeper at the time, who was the shooter, where the shot came from, all kinds of things about each shot, such that at the end of this, we're going to be able to say some pretty cool things and do some pretty cool analysis. Not only, for instance, like the shot locations data that we've done on the site. As an example, we'll be able to do shot locations data like that for 2011, 12, and 13, and also break it down by whether or not the shot was taken with one's foot, one's head, or perhaps another part of one's body that became useful at a certain time. So that's cool.
Maddie knows all about that one.
What?
That other part of the body that became useful at a certain time.
So only certain times.
Well,
just never once became useful, so don't even think about it. But
I think one thing that you noted, that you annotated when we were emailing between us and our new lackeys, was that annotating whether or not a shot was intentionally assisted, and the fact that whether we could take a look at how many different players created their own shots. And I think that'll be interesting. That's actually a study that I'm really looking forward to after you mentioned that. Because I had no idea why. I just kind of said, hey, we should probably be annotating that. And I was like, but I have no idea why. And he replied back and was like, oh, this is brilliant. This is why. And I was like, wow. All right. I'm really looking forward to actually taking a look at that and seeing the comparisons. And seeing
Harrison's suggesting he may be the most accidentally brilliant person in the world, I think, is what's happening.
I don't think
Harrison is kind of a Brent Berry that's a spot-up shooter, whereas if I could call you more of a Stephen Curry, where you can create your own
I'm all right with ideas. Brent Berry. Brent Berry was great. As a Sonics fan, I was Justin great.
Dwight.
And he went to Oregon State.
True.
Brent Berry won the slam dunk competition, didn't he?
95. Yes, yeah. He did.
95 was a great year for a lot of respects.
Great year for white people.
Let's be honest, every year is a great year for white people.
We're going to have hate mail. All right, going really quickly and taking a look at some things, the game. The game is basically –
Michael Douglas movie?
Yeah, it's David Fincher's most underrated movie that he's ever created, and obviously I'm a fan. More accurately, Drew's a humongous fan based off the email that he sent me.
We went to the same high school, man.
You guys went to the same. So do you
different
like,
different years? Not at the same time.
No, well, that's really good to know, because I was worried for a second. But basically, I'm going to start instituting this to where basically I ask you questions, and in the game is however I want it to be, and it is whatever question that I force you guys to answer. I mean, this week I asked you a lot of random questions that I was going to reserve for the game, but because the game didn't really work out, that was the game. So
we already had it and we didn't even know it.
Exactly. You didn't even know it. See, that's how life altering it is. But let's for a second, let's take a look at the upcoming game versus between RSL and between Portland here. Maddie, how many goals do you think Portland's able to create against RSL at home?
How many goals are they able to create?
Yes.
Does that include passing to Robbie Finley for an open goal?
Yeah, because Portland created, I believe, 3 goals last game they played in RSL. So.
And they scored 2 of them.
And they scored 2 of them themselves, yeah. So in terms of creating goals for themselves, I think playing at home, Portland's their expectation would be to create 2 goals for themselves. Which would mean they would have to shut out RSL in that case. I'm talking about expectations, and there's always some variance there. But I think expecting Portland to score 3 goals would be expecting a slightly, you know, improbable outcome. So I think expecting 2 goals is a fair expectation for playing at home. That said, you know, we've talked about how improbable it is that Portland will either tie this match in regulation or pull through with a win. So obviously the 2-0 outcome is not like a probable outcome, but that's probably what Portland needs to shoot for, I guess.
Well, with that, Drew, what do you take the over under of 0 goals for Real Salt Lake?
I take under. Oh wait, sorry, Drew's answer your question.
I think they're gonna score a goal or more. Just because of the nature that Portland's going to be putting everything for the attack because they know they need 2 or more. It wouldn't surprise me if Caelan Porter even tried to, you know, win this in regulation. So
put yourself in Jason Kreis's shoes. Do you think that Jason Kreis does something different as far as the attack is concerned? Do you think that he plays relatively conservative, or do you think that they're just going to look to counter with like Robbie Finley? Just go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's going to be all about the counterattack. I think they're going to put more in the defense and just concentrate on, you know, Nick Raimondo is arguably, actually I would say inarguably, the best distributor as far as goalkeepers go in MLS. So I think they're going to rely on Raimondo to get that ball like quickly, get it to Beckerman, get it to Finley, and try to get that goal on the counter while absorbing the Portland attack. So I actually think it's pretty likely that RSL is going to score a goal.
All right, with that, NBC Sports did its little awards for the goalkeepers this past week. I think it was actually today that they did it. They gave 2 of their 3 votes to Nick Raimondo. Maddie, agree, disagree?
Oh, I agree. No, I think that's good.
They definitely gave 2.
What?
Oh, sorry. I was agreeing that they gave 2 votes to Nick Raimondo. Yeah.
No, I definitely think Raimondo, and we have a new aide on our ASA staff here who's been doing a lot of work on measuring goalkeepers, and I think he would agree too. He probably knows way more than I do, definitely. He would agree too that Raimondo is most deserving of this award, and so I put my faith and our good friend Bill, and I say Raimondo is good to go.
Drew, you have 3 votes for goalkeeper of the year. Does one of them go to Luis Robles?
Fuck no, sorry. absolutely not. I don't think he's in my top 10.
I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go to say he's not in my top 10, but I wouldn't say he's in my top 5.
No way. I mean, Tally Hall, Jimmy Nielsen, Clint Irwin had a great season. Obviously, Ricketts. That's insane. Dan Kennedy, for all the goals he lets in, has a decent save percentage rate. Like,
no. Yeah, don't blame Dan Kennedy for his team, though.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
All right, so it's funny that you mentioned Dan Kennedy, because I was going to use this as a transition. Dan Kennedy in Chivas or not in Chivas after this season?
Didn't they just dump a bunch of players or say they weren't going to bring him back?
Yeah, they just got rid of 10 players. He was not one of them. I think he just – didn't he just during the season sign an extension? He's got another two or years on his contract.
He's got two more years. Does he make it?
I think so. I actually think Chivas – you know, they got rid of a bunch of players that were bad, 10 today. So they, you know, so
– they got rid of 10 players, and it just so happens all of them are bad, so they got rid of 10 bad players.
Coincidentally.
Right. I mean, they still have Bocanegra. They have Dan Kennedy. They have what's his name? The guy that scored a couple goals for them at the end of the season. What's that?
That guy.
Some other guys and stuff. No. I think they can't be worse than they were this year, right? I hope.
I don't think. So.
You think he's gonna be gone?
I do. Yes.
Here's the deal.
So they'll trade him. Think they'll trade him, or like maybe he'll go play for Guadalajara?
I mean, you know, there's so many different options that Dan Kennedy has. I would be really surprised to see him still with Chivas a year or two from now. I'd be more shocked 2 years from now, but 1 year from
now.
That
wasn't a question. Yeah.
Yeah. With that, DC United, more or less than 20 goals?
More.
I'm heading over to our MLS tables on the site here so I can remember how many goals they scored.
You know who their leading goal scorer was this season?
Own goal.
Yes. The leading goal scorer for DC United was own goal with 4. They're going to have more than 20 goals this season. They got a lot of money to spend that they got from winning the Open Cup as well as their low finish in MLS this season. They got hit by injuries really hard. I actually think DC is going to challenge for a playoff spot next season. Boom. Well,
And on that, if I'm not mistaken, they scored 22 this year, right? I mean,
did they?
I think they scored. They scored. I mean, it was in the range of 20. It was in the realm of 20. One thing I've seen in sports, just year in and year out, the teams or players that perform the worst every year just so rarely are the worst again the next year. There's whether it's like luck coming back to earth or just motivation to get better or whatever it is, teams just don't perform the worst back-to-back years. That's just so hard to do. And so I think that even just on that, even if they had the same team hypothetically going into next season, I think they'd do better than they did this year. So yeah, on that, I definitely
Toronto and Chivas both scored 30 goals. And they were bad. So I think United can score 20.
Maddie, 60 seconds on 60 full seconds on Prince Fielder. Go.
What?
60 full seconds on Prince Fielder. Well, Prince Fielder has a terrible contract for any team that wants him. A fat man who's entering his 30s very soon, being paid over $24 million a year to hit a baseball really far and not do anything else.
I thought you were talking about Frank Lampard for a moment there, but carry on.
It's a massive waste of resources for any team. Even if you have the money, you might as well get some guy like Ian Kinsler who makes less and isn't on contract for nearly as long and does other things other than hit the ball, which is nice for a team. On that note, a team happened to just trade Prince Fielder away for Ian Kinsler, and that team that got Kinsler is going to enjoy the investment they made because it's not a $168 million investment in a fat man.
Well,
I think I'm done.
Do you have a problem with fat men?
Do I?
Well, no, Maddie said it's a $160 million investment on fat men, and he seemed to have some equivocal problems with fat men. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. So I just know that he's been really wanting to get that off his chest. So I thought I would give him the opportunity. With that said, I appreciate everyone coming to listen to us. And, thanks for listening to us to say crazy things. Until next week, Drew, say goodbye.
Doodles.
Maddie, say goodbye.
Adios.
in a very weird, deep voice. And until next week, in which you hear us say something wonderfully intelligent, I'm Harrison Crowe. Good night. Canada, it's a maple.